Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, it's back to politics and the June 5th recall elections. 5 days to go until the state of Wisconsin votes on the recall elections involving Governor Scott Walker and Mayor Tom Barrett. Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish and challenger Malin Mitchell and four state Senate seats, including the 29th state Senate district, involving two long-serving lawmakers, Democrat Donna Seidel and Republican Jerry Petruski. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got two great guests today to help us sort things out. Russ Decker is the former Democratic State Senate Majority Leader. He served for 20 years in that 29th district seat before losing the election in 2010 to Republican Pam Galloway. She resigned her seat, and that set up the match between Jerry Petruski and Donna Seidel. Also joining us today, longtime Republican political strategist Bob Williams of Idea Associates of Stevens Point, a former aide to Republican Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfus. We're going to be playing some clips and analyzing the exchanges between Scott Walker and Tom Barrett in last week's gubernatorial debate. There's another one tonight. And we'll also listen to some of the comments from Donna Seidel and Jerry Petruski at last Wednesday's state Senate debate, which was sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio here on the UW Marathon County campus. We also want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 with your comments and opinions. Who are you voting for and why? 1-800-780-9742. Russ and Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Glenn.
Russ,
Russ, we want to start with you. We haven't talked to you since you lost your Senate seat to Pam Galloway back in November of 2010. A lot of very unexpected, dramatic things have happened since then. Your perceptions on what led to your loss in that race, the big Republican sweep that took place that year here in Wisconsin, the chaos that followed, and now these recall elections coming up on Tuesday.
I think the Tea Party was very active and motivated. I think they saw a chance. I think the health care issue that went on in Washington, D.C. motivated them. Even though it's ironic, when I was in office, both myself and Republicans would hear from businesses, do something about the cost of health care. So when the Obama administration and Democrats in D.C. didn't make a move, it's been repudiated by a lot of people, even though they don't know what's in it.
And apparently it was a Republican model.
Well, yeah, it based off of Mitt Romney out of Massachusetts. So, you know, the thing about this whole health care system we have, it's pretty much controlled by insurance companies. And I think that's not in the best interest of average businesses or average working people.
In the last days of that lame duck session, as Governor Doyle was getting ready to leave, you cast a deciding and very controversial vote on a union contract bill for public workers in the state. You've been a union member and a bricklayer for most of your life. Yet a lot of union members thought you betrayed them with that vote. Why did you do it?
Well, let me point out, I had a 97% voting record with the AFL-CIO, and I still belong to the Bricklayers Union. The people of the 29th Senate District decided to go in a different direction, and I respected that. And I made those comments on the floor, and I told people, you know, especially some of the union folks that were upset, I said, look, you know, you folks been backing some Republicans. Let's see if you can get them to deliver for you once rather than always depending on myself.
There's been some speculation. In fact, I just call it a nasty rumor, and I'm sure you've heard it, that you went to Governor Doyle and asked him to pardon your longtime friend Chuck Kuala.
That's not true.
That's not true. And he refused, and then you voted against the union contracts in retaliation. You can set the record straight on that for anybody who might have heard that nasty rumor that didn't happen.
That's something fabricated by someone. I can tell you this, Chuck Kuala and Jim Doyle are not pals.
Right, but Doyle didn't pardon Kuala.
I don't think Jim Doyle pardoned anybody, did he?
No, he didn't. No,
so,
he didn't. But your vote for that union contract had nothing to do with the situation with Jim Doyle not pardoning Kuala.
I'm not even aware there ever was a situation to involve that type of pardon. So, you know, I simply...
You didn't ask Jim Doyle to do that?
Not at all. Jim Doyle and I agreed on some things and disagreed on a lot of things.
How did you feel as a lifelong supporter of labor and unions to get the kind of backlash that you got after that vote from your own people?
Well, you know, it's something that you get some time to time in politics, and you make the best decisions you can, and you make the vote, and you move on. You know, it's 37% of the public employees voted for my opponent. And so they got some of the cross to bear as well.
And apparently, according to the latest polls, about 40% of the union workers this time around are going to vote for Governor Walker.
I don't think it's 40%, but it's close to that.
Did it surprise you when the governor stripped public workers of their collective bargaining rights, something that might not have happened if you'd voted for those contracts?
That wasn't a determining factor, because Senator Fitzgerald, who now is the majority leader, made the comment saying, if we don't do this today, we're going to have to make deeper cuts in the following budget. So I didn't think they were going to strip collective bargaining rights. I knew they would go after them to pay more health care and retirement benefits, and the public employees agreed to that. But stripping collective bargaining really uses the arm of government, in contrary to what the Republicans are always saying, less government, more personal freedom.
Right.
And belonging to a union is not mandatory. It's not something that you force. You collectively bargain, you organize a union, and that's been around for over 100 years in this state.
And if you had to do it all over again, would you still vote against those contracts, seeing everything that happened during the past year?
Yeah, but that's not related. Sure, I wouldn't change my vote. But, Glenn, that's two different issues. You got one of the things that was a proposal that came before the legislature, and then later on, you know, when they did the budget repair bill and the budgets, when they really took out the axe and restricted the collective bargaining rights of public employees.
But if they passed those contracts, wouldn't have that tied the governor's hand? Wouldn't he have been able to touch the collective bargaining provisions?
You can always have a collective bargaining, but the real issue was having the public employees pay for more for health care and retirements, and they would have done that.
And they were willing to do that, but then they went after the collective bargaining rights.
Which, as I'm saying, is apples to oranges. It's not the same thing, because the collective bargaining rights was done by the legislature, not by the public employees.
Who do you think is going to win on Tuesday, Governor Walker or Mayor Barrett?
I think it's going to be very tight. Bob Williams and I were talking about that earlier. He's not a believer in the polls, and I think the polls sometimes are skewed to get an advantage of it, but I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be 1% either way. I'm a Tom Barrett fan. I was with him in the primaries for the governor's race against Jim Doyle, and in this one with Kathy Falk. So I had the privilege to serve with Tom. He's a very bright guy. He's a moderate to progressive, I would label him as, maybe even liberal. But he has the ability to really get along with people. He's very smart.
Bob Williams, who do you think is going to win on Tuesday, Walker or Barrett?
As I told you earlier, I agree it's going to be very close, and I believe that Barrett is going to win.
Even though,
and I don't like that.
You're voting for Scott Walker, but you think Barrett is going to win.
I am going to vote for Walker for a very particular reason. I do not want to legitimize recall elections. I am opposed to them, but I think if it works, it legitimizes it, and there will be other states looking at it. And I would, therefore, I hope that we defeat recall. And that is defeating Barrett, I know, but it's defeating recall that I'm concerned about.
How about Petrusky and Seidel? Let's start with you, Russ Decker, since you sat in the Senate seat for 20 years. Who do you think has the edge? The polls show Petrusky ahead.
I think that's going to be as tight as well. Some of the rule of thought is that if you have an assembly person come out of a swing district in a state Senate race, because there's three assembly seats, generally they have the upper hand. The only thing that has me really concerned with the Petrusky race and a Seidel race right now is I just brought two pieces of literature that came through my mailbox yesterday, and today. One is for Petrusky, one is against Seidel.
I got them too.
But they're coming from out of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem that I think Bob Williams will tell you, is that we're losing control of our campaigns, and the independent expenditures are now really defining candidates and defining what the candidates stand or are opposed to it. And I think it's horrible that way. And the Supreme Court, when it ruled that corporations are people, I mean, you're seeing tons of money coming in here from all over the place, and it came in my race. You know, and I made a comment to Bob. When I first ran in 1990, campaign headquarters used to be just full of people. It was fun. It was exciting. You have people stuffing envelopes, labeling them, and putting stamps on it. You have 20, 30 people. Now it's all done by electronics, and people are being removed more and more and more from campaigns, and I think that's unfortunate.
Bob Williams, Petrusky, or Seidel?
It's above my pay grade to comment on it. I only got, because it's not my district. I can't vote in that election. However, I'm so old, I was down there, been in the legislature as an outsider. I like to see it when it had part-time lawyers and part-time farmers. And everybody's full-time now, and we don't have farmers, and we don't have lawyers.
That's right.
Now, and I think Petrusky, being a farmer and a ginseng person, so in my heart, I'd like to see another farmer back in the legislature to keep him there. But as far as knowing the race, I think that race is going to be greatly influenced by the top.
By the gubernatorial
Absolutely.
Race.
Absolutely. And I think if the last poll is right that Marquette did, and I don't believe in polls and at this time of the game, I think that will pull her along, I mean him along, if the governor wins by 7%.
Barrett is pointing to some other polls that show it like 49-49.
Oh, sure. It's my poll against your poll, and as I told you, I had the Dreyfus campaign. I had much to do with it, and the polls told us we were going to lose 61-39 or something like that, and we won in the primary 58-50. We won by 10 points. So since then, I've just said polls, I don't believe them. In a contested, I believe them for products, like for craft products.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Housewives will tell you what's true. But for political elections that are close, and I agree with Russ, I think that's a lot closer than 7%.
The Daily Herald today endorsed two people on opposite sides of the divide, Scott Walker for governor and Donna Seidel for the Senate. Now, they said they hoped Walker would try to bring the state together and govern in a more bipartisan manner if he wins on Tuesday. Bob Williams, do you think that's likely? Or do you think this governor will lash out at his opponents and go after the unions who organized the recall effort and maybe make the divisions even worse? What do you think will happen?
I don't believe that he's dumb enough to punish people if he wins. Punishment will win him nothing. I believe he has to go to them and say, it's done, it's finished, let's now get above the business of the people. And so that question, I just think it would be stupid for him to punish people. I know he's going to have people tell him to do that, but he's the governor, he has the last word.
Russ Decker, do you think there's any chance of bringing this state into some semblance of normalcy, depending on who wins on Tuesday?
This is one I'm going to disagree with Bob Williams on. I think Walker is going to, if he wins this gubernatorial race, he's going to be emboldened to do even more. And I think with the breed of Republicans that have been coming in, and Bob can back this up, when I first went in 1990, we had a lot of moderates. Even the U.S. Senate at that time was considered to have 70 moderates, Republicans and Democrats. We used to work things out. We just go out after session, we'd have beer and pizza, sit down and say, you know, Glenn or Bob, what's the problem with this bill? And we'd socialize and we had relationships built up. And that started changing in the mid-1990s. And I'd say about in the early 2000s, it completely vanished. You know, I always outreached to Republicans, and I still talk to some of the guys like Mike Hipsch, who's a Secretary of Department Administration under Walker. A good guy. He's very strong right-wing politically, but he was always a straight shooter. John Gard was another one. He was Speaker of the Assembly. We put a budget together. He's hardcore conservative, but he was a straight shooter, and you could sit down and work things out with him. And because we had different type of relationships built up, and that disintegrated. I think 24-hour news when it came out with
right.
CNN, because they had to manufacture stories, and Clinton took the brunt of that. And then the radio came out with Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh pounding on Democrats.
Well, and now you've got the internet.
And you got MSNBC pounding on, at night with Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz pounding on the Republicans. And I think it's polarized the state and it's polarized the country. And I don't think it's good for us because, you know, when I go out for a fish fry, people get more worked up about politics than I do. You know, I try to say, well, it's, you know, we can work it out and I'd give my view, but they were actually brutal sometimes. The last cycle.
So you think the governor will go after his enemies if he wins?
I think he's going to have people pushing him to do it. That he will go along with that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got former State Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker. He hasn't been on the radio much in the last year. He's with us, along with veteran Republican strategist Bob Williams of Idea Associates. We're talking recall election politics. We'd like you to weigh in at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Russ Decker and Bob Williams hashing out recall election politics. We'd love to hear from you. We've got wide open phone lines if you want to get in. Who are you going to vote for on Tuesday and why? 1-800-780-9742. Gentlemen, I'm going to play a clip from the debate on last Thursday between Scott Walker and Tom Barrett on collective bargaining. Let's listen to this, and then we'll come back and discuss.
I had a chance to do it again. If I'd gone out last January and early February and made the case all across the state of Wisconsin and explained what was happening back then. Because remember, before our reforms, school districts all across the state were literally spending tens of millions of dollars more than they needed to because under collective bargaining, they were forced to buy their health insurance from essentially just one company. In fact, I talked to a small business owner today in Cuba City at a farm just outside of Cuba City on the west side of Grant County, and he talked about working with school districts all across southwestern Wisconsin. And literally the money that they've saved is money that's going right back into the classroom. If I told people that was what was at stake back then, I think most people, most taxpayers, be they Democrat or Republican, would have said, Governor, you need to fix it. If I talked about how under the old collective bargaining system, you had abuses in overtime in places like the city of Madison where a bus driver was able to make $150,000 because of overtime abuse, I think most taxpayers would have said, you need to fix it. My problem was I fixed it, then I talked about it. Most politicians spend all their time talking about it but never fix it. In the future, we're going to both talk about it and fix it.
Scott, you started this by saying that you're going to drop the bomb and that you were going to go first after the public employees and that you would use divide and conquer as your strategy to go after the workers and that you would use a budget bill to tear this state apart. I think of great leaders, leaders like Franklin Roosevelt, leaders like Giuliani. And what did they do at a time of crisis? They tried to bring their people together. You decided to use a budget crisis to try to divide and conquer this state. That's what happened. That's what led to all of this. And you succeeded. You succeeded in dividing this state. But you said it was the first step. Because this is really about workers' rights. And it's not just about public employees. It's about the middle class and whether people who work in the middle class have rights, whether they have safety rights. Because I've talked to people who are working in our prisons right now. And they've said they've never been more afraid because their rights were taken away. I am concerned about those rights. I'm concerned that those rights have been taken away, and I think it's an attack on the middle class. There's a reason he hasn't said he would veto a right-to-work bill, and the reason is because he wouldn't.
And Russ Decker, let's take that last point up first. Do you think a right-to-work law is in the future for Wisconsin? Scott Walker says he's not going to do it, but he has said he won't veto a right-to-work bill if it reaches his desk. Tom Barrett says he's got a hidden plan to do it.
I hope not. I tell you what, because if you look at the states that have right-to-work, it's the right-to-work for less. And when the middle class was the strongest in not only Wisconsin but in this country is when Eisenhower was president, and over 30% of the workers belonged to unions that were collective bargaining. That was the first time that they were able to buy decent cars and decent housing, because after the war, everybody was supportive of the GIs coming home, but the workers really made some tremendous gains. You know, the thing about, you know, I came out of labor as a business manager and as a worker. I led strikes and was on strikes. They're not fun. A lot of people look at the glamour. I'll tell you, remember when James Rivers went on strike up here on Bridge Street? You know, a lot of us went and marched with them because we thought they had a reasonable request that was being denied. So I think the divide and conquer comment that Scott Walker made shows the true belief that he has, and he did sponsor collective bargaining or
right to work
legislation when he first got in the assembly. So I think, you know, it's hard to change your colors once you've went out that far in front.
Bob Williams, divide and conquer, is that an indication that we're going to have a right to work law in Wisconsin?
No, I think Mr. Petrosky has said that, and he's another Republican, and he is not going to vote for it because he respects the unions. I think you're divide and conquer. You use that and you're pinning it on the governor, which he said those words. But I think the brand of the Democrats was hurt very much by Kathleen Falk in that early in her election. Democrats were supposed to be opposed to rich people and corporations. And if I heard her once, I heard her right at the beginning. Corporations are bad, rich people, they're running things. And she left that brand, and I you never heard Mr. Barrett, Mayor Barrett, you never hear him talking. He doesn't even talk about collective bargaining anymore. But he was left with that division, and he's not trying to divide. And now I don't think it's divide and conquer at all. I think it is getting together after this election that the Petruskis, they're all going to go, many Republicans are going to go to the governor and say, it is over. It is finished. Let's move on.
What about the language used by the governor? That's something that Tom Barrett brought up. Divide and conquer, drop the bomb, union thugs, talk about keeping a Louisville Slugger baseball bat in his office. Can either of you imagine any other Wisconsin governor, Jim Doyle, Tommy Thompson, Tony Earle, Lee Sherman Dreyfus, who you worked for, Bob, using that kind of language?
It was those were private conversations that leaked out. He didn't do that on the microphone. He did it. It's gone.
Well, he said union thugs in an interview that I did with him.
Union thugs?
Yeah.
He's wrong in saying it. That's all. But it's over. If he wins, it's over. He has to be the one to come and say, we now have the most important objective is to help bring, governors can't bring jobs to state. It's back to those terrible corporations that Kathleen Falk talked about. It's the private sector that has to bring jobs. He has to go hat in hand to the business community, the people who hire people, the managers, and say, what can I do to help you make your businesses more successful?
Let's go to the phones. Larry in Madison has been waiting patiently. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join us, Larry, you're on Route 51 with Russ Decker and Bob Williams.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I saw a billboard on the way back from Stevens Point. It said, keep unions out of our government. I'm a public worker. I have education. I have a degree. In fact, Governor Scott Walker would not even be qualified to do my job. I work in radiation protection for the state of Wisconsin. I'm in an engineering union. And my main point is, what's this keep you, this is a whole attitude on basically half of Wisconsin and half the country. Keep unions out of government. They vilified employees that are in unions. Union is a, union and dues paying, all these things are bad words, and it's been pushed on the public by, you know, the media, like Rush Limbaugh and all these other people, all these talk shows. And, you know, unions didn't cause this problem. Public employees didn't cause this problem. I'll tell you who caused the problem. It's the politicians. I don't spend the taxpayers' money. I get paid for doing my job. And whether it's paid by the taxpayers or, I, you know, when I go in a restaurant, I'm paying the owner of that business. I'm paying his people's wages by patronizing his business. The whole point of that is it's irrelevant. We have been vilified as public employees.
Larry,
not everybody,
Larry,
is probably eligible. You know, we were characterized as the haves and the have-nots, and we all agreed to pay more given the state of the economy. I think the governor overreached. I think Scott Walker could have been a really terrific leader if he wouldn't have went in with an attitude. And I still don't believe
Larry,
Senator Decker how he voted at the end before he went out. But if you could just comment on why unions are really
we got to move on and get a response from our guest Russ Decker. Why don't you start first?
Well, I'm not sure if he asked a question. He made more of a statement. You know, blaming the politicians.
Keep unions out of government.
Yeah, you know, unions are part of government. I mean, you got public employees. You got they're citizens of the state of Wisconsin. They live here. They buy cars. They put their kids to school. I want to just circle back one thing. You talked about, you know, when Jim Doyle reduced the regulations on government. I know he went up to Tomahawk to the paper mill. And that was a big thing for them. And he never got much credit for that. And Tommy Thompson started Badger Care back in 1999, which was a good move because it was for working people who didn't have insurance. And now Scott Walker and the Republicans knocked 17,000 people off of Badger Care. Tommy had a good sense, I think, of what needed to be done. I think he was a former assembly representative and a governor that realized government could make life better for some working people. And I think you're seeing that deteriorate both on a national level and on a state level.
Bob Williams, rhetoric about unions being the haves and everyone else being the have-nots. Now, that's language that I've heard the governor use.
I would like to go back to Larry, but we won't tune him in again. But I would like Larry to look at that sign board, keep unions out of the state. I think that was one of those outside groups. I can't believe a candidate would endorse, a candidate for governor or any Republican would endorse keep unions out of the state. So I think somebody else is buying that. I might remind him also that it was Franklin D. Roosevelt, and I voted for him, and I debated on the side of more federal government when I was in high school. Franklin D. Roosevelt was the one that said, the public sector shall never have unions. And the problem is the lawyers and then the aggrieved are against each other, and they're both public servants so often. So why would you have a public sector? At least that was Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Larry, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Don in Wausau now. Don, you're on Route 51 with Russ Decker and Bob Williams. Hello, Don.
Hello. Both of you are previous lawmakers, let me put it that way. Okay?
Well, Russ Decker is. Bob Williams worked for Governor Dreyfus.
Okay. Well, my question is I've heard the Scott Walker now has the power to change some legislation in as far as, like, well, for instance, deer hunting, with his deer czar. Instead of having to change different regulations, different types of, I don't know what it all can consist of, but I've heard rumors that he could sell public state parks. He could sell all kinds of things.
Well, Don, let me follow up on that. I know what you're getting at. This has become an issue among some people. The deer czar that Governor Walker appointed in that position had a record of saying in Texas when he was there that hunting should be done on private lands and that hunting on public lands was the last vestige of communism. I think that's a direct quote from him. Do either of you think that our heritage of hunting on public lands is under threat? Don, thanks so much for the call.
I do not think it's under threat at all. I think it would be, again, a dumb move of any politician to run against deer hunters in Wisconsin, period. Russ?
I agree with you. But, James Kroll is the fellow that came out of Texas, and what he said, public hunting is pining for socialism. He said that in a Texas Monthly, so you're exactly right, Glenn. Scott Walker and some of those folks are big privatization type of people. And I think you're right, though, Bob. If he goes against the deer hunters, that's one thing. The deer hunters and packers are pretty much passionate issues that don't have any partisanship to them.
Add beer to that, and you've got Wisconsin.
Okay, beer and pretzels and mustard, and we're on.
Another issue that's and thanks for the call, Don. Another issue that's come up in the gubernatorial race is the ongoing John Doe investigation facing the governor and his criminal defense fund. Let's listen to a clip from last Thursday's debate on that.
Scott Walker is the only governor in this country who has a criminal defense fund. He's paid over $100,000 in criminal defense fees to a lawyer who specializes in federal prosecutions and a different lawyer who specializes in state prosecutions. You're correct. His key aides have been charged. And it involved a network in his office, in his executive office, 25 feet, about the distance we are from each other, where there was a secret computer system that did fundraising, did campaigning. And when he found out about it, did he order an investigation? No. He sent one email, and he said, we can't afford to have any more stories. His concerns were about public relations, not about criminal investigations.
I've had a high level of integrity all the way back to my early days as a kid when I earned the rank of Eagle Scout, and have shown that during my time in the state assembly as the county executive, now as the governor of the state of Wisconsin. I will continue to have high integrity long after I'm in this position and long after this whole process is completed. I think it's important to look at the facts. The facts clearly show that any time it was brought to our attention that someone violated our very strict policy against using taxpayer resources for political purposes, we took swift action. This investigation started because my office asked for it nearly 2 years ago. We haven't been the target of this. There's nothing new here. The reason I think the mayor and our opponents want to spend so much time on this is they want to distract attention because they're desperate.
Bob Williams, is the John Doe investigation and the publicity surrounding it a sign of desperation in the Tom Barrett camp?
I think it is, because I'm a believer in the innocent until proven guilty, which is sort of the mantra that we live by. And any lawyer is going to tell you, and I've asked the same question because I'm not a lawyer, in that a criminal defense fund, with what's happening in this state today and with the anger that's going on, I would sure want to have some money there with that much going on in the office of the in Milwaukee. But the lawyer, the politician, the political science professor at UW-Milwaukee said today on television this morning, it's crazy that not to have a defense fund. And that's a bogus issue. Innocent until proven guilty. Let's get on to the next part of the – let's get back to jobs.
Russ Decker, is it a bogus issue?
I don't think it's a bogus issue, but it takes a while for these things to percolate all the way through the system. We saw it a number of years ago when a number of legislators, both Democrats and Republicans, were violating the law, and it took several years for it to come out. And I think this may be true. The same thing may be happening to Scott Walker. You know, I'm not sure. But it does take a lot of time away from the issue of jobs. Bob's absolutely right. One of the things that doesn't get talked a lot about really is the quality of education, K-12 especially, how it sets up kids and students to go on to further education, go into the workplace. So, you know, the John Doe thing has a lot of legs to it. I'm not sure how far it's going to go. And I agree with Bob on this issue. I'm not about to point fingers at people who haven't done anything wrong.
Russ Decker and Bob Williams talking recall election politics. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this break to talk about the 29th state Senate race.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking recall election politics with former Democratic State Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker, who held the 29th state Senate seat in north central Wisconsin for 20 years. That seat now up for a recall election. And also Bob Williams, a veteran political strategist, and he is now with Idea Associates in Stevens Point, a Republican aide to Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfus. We're going to get into the 29th state Senate race. We've got a package news story that I put together this morning detailing not only the Senate debate, but some of the things that led up to the recall election between Jerry Petruski and Donna Seidel.
September 5th, 2011, the city of Wausau's Labor Day parade steps off amidst controversy. Organizers tried to keep Republicans from marching, then relented and allowed them in the very back.
Go home, Republicans!
At the front is the Grand Marshal, four-term Democratic Assemblywoman Donna Seidel, Assistant Minority Leader, former Clerk of Courts, former cop.
The rights that have been diminished or taken away this year are going to be fought awfully hard to have them come back.
Collective bargaining rights for public workers taken away by Governor Walker. 4 months later, Donna Seidel announces she is running for the state Senate in a recall election against freshman Republican Pam Galloway. Then the unexpected happens. Galloway resigns her Senate seat, and the Republicans find a new candidate.
This election should not be about partisan politics.
Enter Jerry Petruski, 14-year veteran of the State Assembly, head of the Transportation Committee, former ginseng and beef farmer, former union member.
I love this area, and I would never consider living anyplace else. To me, this is God's country.
Petruski versus Seidel, two of the most powerful politicians in north central Wisconsin. Both say they work in a bipartisan manner, but these are not bipartisan times, as evidenced in a Wisconsin public radio debate last week.
Families can't even sit down and have a family dinner together without being afraid it's going to break out into an argument over politics. It began under Scott Walker when he dropped the bomb.
Donna's idea of working together to slam somebody on TV to the tune of about $100,000+. That's Donna's working together.
Jerry Petruski is angry about an ad accusing him of cutting funds for health care screenings for women.
You slashed funding for breast and cervical cancer screenings.
And voted against emergency contraception
for victims of rape and incest.
I have something to say to you, Jerry Petruski.
Jerry, how could you?
At the debate, Petruski rips into Seidel. She stands her ground.
I voted for a $62,000 increase and a $38,000 increase. She is the one that actually voted to cut that program.
He also voted to defund Planned Parenthood, the only provider of cancer screenings for 12,000 women in 8 counties.
Seidel also attacks Petruski for voting to repeal the state's equal pay enforcement law.
43 other states have state protections for equal pay discrimination. Wisconsin was one, and we were right to do it.
And the law was not used. And on top of that, the group that registered in favor of this law were the trial lawyers, because their intention is to make more money out of this deal.
Donna Seidel is also under attack on the airwaves from conservative groups like the Republican State Leadership Committee.
Her recipe for success costs us jobs and money. Seidel voted no to almost half the jobs bills last year, even one that would have created thousands of jobs.
Thousands of jobs from an iron mine in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior.
I wanted to be absolutely sure that air quality quality would not be compromised, that drinking water in that area would never be contaminated by lead and arsenic.
The reason that this failed is not because it was a bad bill. They did not want to see Scott Walker have a win on the mining issue.
But it is Act 10, stripping away collective bargaining rights for public workers, that started the recall. Seidel says Republicans will go after private union members next by making Wisconsin a right-to-work state. Petrusky denies it.
I don't believe that there is a plan to do that. I would vote no. And I don't believe that there is support to do it. We are partnered with a lot of unions in this state.
You said we will not give you opportunities to sit at the table and talk about workplace safety, talk about your conditions of your job, talk about your hours of work or anything else. And now to say you support unions?
Donna Seidel decries deep cuts to education and Badger Care coverage. Jerry Petrusky says Governor Walker balanced the budget without raising taxes. On Tuesday, the voters in the 29th Senate District decide which of these long-serving lawmakers will survive.
And, Russ Decker, do you miss not serving in politics after listening to those exchanges on last Wednesday night?
You know, that's part of politics. You know, you got to have some thick skin, as Bob will tell you, to be in politics to begin with. But, you know, I was listening to that clip, and the big thing that Jerry Petrosky and Scott Walker are talking about not raising taxes, they actually raise taxes on those that can afford it the least. You know, if you got two kids and you make under $45,000 a year, you're going to pay $149 more per year. And if you got three kids and you make less than $48,000 a year, you're going to pay about $518 more in taxes because they dialed back the earned income tax credit, which is something that Tommy was on board, Ronald Reagan was for, because it was a way to try to help working people have a little more cash in their pockets. So they raised it on people who could least afford it, and they created loopholes for the big companies like Walmart and Amway and Koch Brothers and those type of things. So I think it's upside down. And, you know, if it worked, everybody would be on board those type of things. So I want just one more thing. You know, Representative Petrosky is the chair of transportation. And the first raid on transportation was when the Republicans controlled the Assembly and the Senate, and they took $600 million out of transportation and borrowed to backfill that. That's a 20-year mortgage to pay a one-time raid, and they blamed Jim Doyle successfully for it, but they were part of the equation.
Bob Williams, your reaction to the arguments that we just heard in that clip from that debate on Wednesday night?
There were many arguments on many subjects.
we had a big crowd. We had over 400 people here.
I'm glad I wasn't there. I said on this program months ago that collective bargaining was a privilege, not a right. And 23 states do not have collective bargaining. It's a privilege for Wisconsin people. It is not a right. That's my still my thought. On the iron mine, I understand she's backing off of that now. Again, I'm only getting some materials through the press. But we're going to have a mine. We have to have a mine. Whoever wins the governorship should immediately go to Platteville and look at the flag, the state flag. It has a miner on it. There's a miner standing there. Do you realize that? Why? Because at Platteville, they teach mining. They should get the best of the professors to come to Madison and say, you can have a mine, you can have the environment, you need the jobs. If you've ever been up in that North Country, which I have, they need jobs. Leave it to the scientists who gave irrigation to the farmers where I live and oppose the Sierra Club types.
Russ Decker, is that right? Are we going to have a mine regardless of who wins the recall election?
I think you can have the economy and the environment go hand in hand. You don't have to pick one or the other. And I think the thing about the iron mine is the same as farming, agriculture. There's an awful lot of residual jobs. All the manufacturing, most of it's in the southeastern part of the state where, you know, Harnish Vega and all those are. But if you look at the farming community as well, every tractor, every combine, every hay wagon they buy, very few are manufactured here after Drott left Schofield. And they're manufactured in Iowa and on the east coast of Wisconsin. So I think there should be a natural coalition there. You don't have to sacrifice the environment. The Wisconsin River is a perfect example of that. Remember in the 60s how polluted it was? Everybody's making jokes about it. Now people are tearing down the old houses and building mansions on it. People are recreating. They're fishing in it.
And Rush, the paper companies are the ones that did the big job in cleaning it up.
That and the municipal sewage treatment plant.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think
it's a partnership, private-public partnership.
I agree. You know, and I think there's one thing that, you know, I learned a lot with the paper companies sitting down with them. Donna did it and Jerry Petrosky and all of us did was that they're not controlled locally anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they're controlled by somebody out of New Hampshire or Sweden or something like that. And I think we've lost a lot by not having that local ownership.
Let's talk about the women's issues, which Donna emphasized. The cuts to Planned Parenthood and the Equal Pay Enforcement Law. Jerry Petruski was livid about that TV ad we listened to. Does he have a point, or does Donna Seidel have legitimate concerns?
Well, I think the cuts that went through are actually going to hurt women and their health care. You know, Planned Parenthood, most people have a perception that that's where the abortions are performed. And you can't seem to break down that wall with the breast screening and the cervical cancer screening and all those type of things. And a lot of people go there just for those type of treatments because they don't have insurance. And I think that wall is a very tough wall for us to get over. Cutting in those type of areas that were done by in the last budget, I think, are short-sighted, because preventive care is the way to save money.
Bob Williams?
I would like to address that equal pay for women. One thing, women work on an average of 41 hours a week, men 43 hours. That's from the Wall Street Journal. So there won't be equal pay. But also, I want to say that equal pay for women is guaranteed in the discrimination as a federal law. And I've had, well, let's see, 30 or 40 large clients over my many years with my public relations firm. I can't believe there's anybody running a company today that's going to give unequal pay and risk of having a federal agent in his office. I think that they're going to do it. And I'm in the business of public relations, corporate communication, and I've taught school at the universities in this. It's dominated by women. That my whole area, 2 out of 3 in my classes would be women. So equal pay, that's a bogus issue. It's not going to be unequal pay, because I don't want to be in jail with a federal agent on my back.
Seidel says it's very hard to file charges in federal court. It would be easier in state court, and that's why the state law was a deterrent.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think that's another bogus
issue. All right,
we've
got to move on. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Republican Bob Williams and Democrat Russ Decker, and your calls if you want to get in, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. If you want to comment on the recall elections coming up on Tuesday, and I imagine you've got an opinion, who are you going to vote for? 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We've still got time to hear your opinion in the next 10 minutes or so. We're going to play one more clip from the Tom Barrett, Scott Walker debate, and this involves funding for this gubernatorial recall election and the amount of funding that's coming from out of state.
Now, this is something that people in this state get. There is something wrong when a sitting governor raises 60 to 70% of his most recent campaign contributions from people who don't live in the state, from a billionaire in Texas, from developers in Missouri. Do you think for 1 second those people care about what's happening in Superior or Sturgeon Bay or Stevens Point or Sturtevant or Sharon? No, they don't. This is all part of this ideological civil war. He wants this state to be the prototype for the Tea Party nationally. That's why he's such a rock star. They love him. He's not doing what the people in Wisconsin want them to do, but he is pleasing these billionaires.
Well, you look at where it all started. Last February, March, we saw millions of dollars poured in the state of Wisconsin from out-of-state special interests trying to attack our reforms. They spent them on TV. They brought thousands of people into the state of Wisconsin. That continued in the Supreme Court race. It continued spending tens of millions of dollars trying to take out 6 Republican state senators in the recall elections themselves. And we've seen it all throughout the recall process itself. We wouldn't have to raise or spend a penny in this election if it weren't for the out-of-state special interest. And they continue to pour. We just saw reports this week of more money coming in from the Democrat Governors Association and from pouring into the Greater Wisconsin Committee, which is a front group for all the union money coming in there. And what you've seen is people from across the state, and many, yes, from across the country, saying, you know what? Here's a governor who's willing to stand up and take on the powerful special interest and instead do something that's unique. Put the power back in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers.
Russ Decker, the governor says none of this would have been necessary if it wasn't for the out-of-state union money causing the recalls. Is that true?
Oh, I don't think that's true at all. I think that happened after the fact. you know, Scott Walker did this along with his Republican colleagues when they took strip collective bargaining. I think you saw the demonstrations, you know. And, you know, Bob Williams being in public relations, that is not a good image for us nationwide. To have that constantly on TV, on national news, having the labor strike, because I think corporations, when they want to look place to invest, they want to have stability. They want to have harmony, and they want to have good workers that earn good wages that support their families. So I think Scott Walker's wrong on this one. He created along with his Republican legislature.
Bob Williams, Tom Barrett is accusing Walker of staging an ideological civil war. He's saying he's doing the bidding of rich, right-wing, out-of-state billionaires, not doing the bidding of the people of Wisconsin. Is that true?
I don't believe that. By the way, I agree with both of the comments. They all add up to the fact that we got to do something, and we won't, but we should, on the out-of-state money, in-state money. The in-state money, the $4 million that Falk got from the teachers' union. My wife was an eighth-grade teacher and ninth grade in one of her careers. Teachers shouldn't be having to spend their money that way. No, I think that they're both right. The money shouldn't be coming in from the out-of-state. It's another issue that is not going to decide this election whatsoever.
Well, the money is coming in largely as a result of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision. Mm-hmm. Are we in for an ugly election? I mean, if the recall has been ugly, what about in November if Wisconsin is a swing state?
I think it's opened a door. The U.S. Supreme Court is trashing everything. You know, even John McCain saying that money is personal property, and it's not freedom of speech, and can be regulated. You know, and I just think it's ironic that we're going to go on this road, and I don't see it changing. I think it's going to get more sophisticated. Even the Koch brothers have said they become good at this, and they're going to get better.
How big is the issue of fairness, the fact that there's a bigger gap between the rich and poor in this country than at any time since the Great Depression? And there seems to be no way to get the richest Americans to pay more in taxes. Maybe they shouldn't have to pay more. Maybe we ought to go to a flat tax.
If you're talking about the state, I think we should go for a sales tax. And I think the best speech I've heard in this campaign was from La Follette. He said he'd go for a 1.5 cent sales tax increase if it all could be put into education, K-12, and then I would say the voc tech system.
I was specifically talking about the gap between the rich and the poor, which is greater than at any time since the Great Depression. You have 400 families owning as much wealth as the bottom 150 million Americans. Is that healthy for America? And how do we solve something like that without raising taxes on the rich?
It's capitalism at work. That's what it is. And we have to, I don't like these salaries paid to people. But we're in competition with the world. Every company here in this state, in this county, is a competitor in China, in France, in some place. And the bidding for these people at those jobs is so severe that they're paying for it. They're getting, and then they fire. The good news is they can fire somebody in the private sector if he doesn't do the job. We have to seem to recall them now in the public sector.
Russ Decker, this is just capitalism at work.
Well, it's capitalism, but it's skewed, and I think the Republicans made it worse. You know, they eliminated the capital gains tax in the state of Wisconsin for people that trade stocks or have bonds or make money off real estate, for an example. That was $36 million in 2 years, and it's, as I said earlier, they raised taxes on the lowest income people in the state of Wisconsin. They created loopholes like the Las Vegas loophole where, you know, you can hide your assets throughout the state and get away from paying your fair share. So it's hard to get it around it, but, you know, you look at Wall Street, what they're doing. You look at AIG and Lehman Brothers and now J.P. Morgan. I mean, the head of J.P. Morgan just lost $2 billion in bad investments, and he's one of the highest CEOs in the country.
What I learned in high school, and this is a number of years ago, was that we don't have a straight capitalist system in America. We certainly don't have a socialist system. We've got a mixed economy, which has some capitalist aspects and some socialist aspects. So, you know, is it fair to say that we've got to look at this in terms of straight black and white terms? We've either got to have complete state control of everything, or we have a laissez-faire capitalist system in which everything is, you know, up in the air, and we're free to do anything we want and make as much money as we want. We don't have to worry about Anybody else?
Yeah, let's not blame either party. If you will look at Obama running for president last time and this time, the big corporate investment in the he's still raising more money than Romney is, and he should because he's in power. But the big corporations, as you call them, or the rich, they're going to put their money into this on both sides of the aisle. So this I don't like it. But that's the way it is. I don't know how we can change it because there are Democrat legislators that are after the money just as much for their campaigns as there are Republicans. And they're getting that money.
Any predictions on Tuesday, gentlemen?
Close either way. I just want to finish up follow what Bob said. You know, Michelle Bachmann, I think the former Republican governor or candidate for president said it best. The big boys have learned to capitalize their gains and socialize their losses. And she was talking about TARP. When George Bush started that and then it got carried on through Obama. I think that was what she really framed well because these guys are taking wild risk, mm-hmm. You know, subprime and all those type of things. And when things collapse, they go to the government because we can't afford to lose millions and millions of jobs.
You both think this election is going to be close on Tuesday?
Absolutely close.
Yeah, Russ Decker, you ever want to get back into politics again? You spent 20 years doing it.
I had 20 years. I met a lot of neat people. One of the biggest thrills I ever had was getting the Park Falls paper mill up and going again after it collapsed. The other thing was opening up a dental clinic up in Ladysmith. I really felt a part of that. And if you ever you want to have somebody on here who's a really pro, good guy business person, call up Butch Johnson.
Done it already.
I mean, he is one of the unique characters.
He's one of those millionaires we talk about.
And he's a great guy, but he
Russ,
really invests.
We're out of time. Okay. Yes or no answer. You're going to get back into politics.
I had my fill.
You've had your fill. All right.
And I'll never get there.
We want to thank today's guest, former Democratic State Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker, longtime Republican political strategist Bob Williams of Idea Associates of Stevens Point. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker and Crystal Waters. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Don't forget to vote on June 5th, this coming Tuesday. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.